Everyone, sovereign and subject alike, is protected by the due process clauses of the Federal Constitution and its 14th Amendment. This gives you the doorway to ask about the underlying obligations any person asserts that you may have. In the people's realm, this questioning process is called common law process, and specifically a demur. In the corporate realm, this process is called administrative procedures. This procedure has been around for many millennia. This exact same procedure is found in biblical texts. In the garden, God did not accuse any wrongdoing, only asked questions. Where are you? Why are you wearing those leaves? The ancient Judean version is found in Scripture. If thee have a dispute with thy brother, go to him first in private and seek a resolution. If ye cannot resolve the dispute privately, go to thy brother with one or two witnesses and seek a remedy. If those procedures do not resolve the conflict, then and only then do ye seek the assistance of the judges in resolving the dispute. Current administrative procedure statutes provide that you first go privately to the officer or agency you believe you have a conflict with. This is done in writing. The officer or agency representative then either agrees with you and sets the record straight regarding the dispute, or controverts or disagrees with your allegations and claims, or asks for more information. If the officer or agency representative controverts the allegations and claims, a third-party witness, generally known as an administrative hearings officer or administrative law judge, is brought in to assist in attempting to resolve the issues. If either party disagrees with the findings of the administrative law referee, then the judiciary is brought in to resolve the controversy. The Freedom of Information Act, known as FOIA, and the Privacy Act are in reality the people's common law subpoena power. These principles are also enacted for the states and their municipal corporations, commonly called public disclosure laws. Each federal agency has specific, published regulations and procedures governing its common law administrative proceedings. Nearly every state agency has published regulations and procedures governing its common law administrative proceedings. In this training course, others will cover the IRS common law administrative procedures for determining what, if any, obligations you may have regarding federal taxes, often resulting in a determination that there is no obligation. You will also hear a segment in this training course on the common law administrative procedures published in the Fair Debt Collection and Reporting Act for resolving disputes with corporate creditors, often resulting in a determination that there is no obligation. Law schools teach their students that they should never ask a question in trial that they do not already know the answer to. This is good advice for anyone involved in litigation, even at the administrative level. As the Founding Fathers pointed out, know the law. This knowledge is not for the purpose of telling your adversary the law. They are already presumed to know the law. Knowledge of the law will allow you to formulate questions of your adversary that will lead to your opponent having to assert the very position you want the record to reflect. Since your adversary has now asserted your position, you now simply agree with your adversary and win. Scripture teaches, agree with thine adversary quickly. So does law. A few simple examples. A person that you're reasonably certain is a representative of one of these municipal corporations contacts you and asserts that you need to contact them to obtain a license or permit. We respond and agree that if we have an obligation to get such a license and permit, we should certainly do so. Then we ask that person to identify themselves and specifically identify their principal. Is it the Republic or the municipal corporation? If the Republic, we want to see the constitutional delegation of authority to compel involuntary association and servitude. If the municipal corporation, we need to know if they are acting in a governmental capacity, a proprietary capacity, or as a corporate services vendor. If in a governmental capacity, we need to be informed of the constitutional delegation of authority to compel involuntary association and servitude. If in a proprietary or commercial vendor capacity, we need to see the underlying contract upon which the obligation lies. Another example. A person that we can be certain is a representative of one of these municipal corporations contacts us and asserts that we need to contact them relating to a tax obligation. We respond and agree that if we have an obligation to pay such a tax, we should certainly do so. Then, we ask that person to identify themselves and specifically identify their principal. Is it the Republic or the municipal corporation? If the Republic is the principal, we want to see the constitutional delegation of authority to subject us to that particular tax or to compel involuntary association and servitude. If the municipal corporation is the party, we need to know if they are acting in a corporate or governmental capacity. If in a governmental capacity, we need to be informed of the constitutional delegation of authority to subject us to that particular tax or to compel involuntary association and servitude. If in a proprietary or commercial vendor capacity, we need to see the underlying contract upon which the obligation lies. Another example. A person that we can be certain is a representative of one of these municipal corporations contacts us and asserts that we have an obligation to collect from others and return to the governmental or municipal organization sales or income taxes from other people. We respond and we agree that if we have an obligation to collect and return such a tax, we should certainly do so. Then we ask that person to identify themselves and specifically identify their principal. Again, is it the Republic or the municipal corporation? Again, if it's the Republic, we want to see a constitutional delegation of authority to subject us to involuntary and uncompensated servitude as a tax collector. If it is the municipal corporation, we again need to know if they're acting in the governmental capacity, proprietary, or as a municipal services vendor. If in a governmental capacity, again, we need to know the constitutional authority to subject anyone to involuntary and uncompensated association and servitude. If in a proprietary or commercial vendor capacity, we again need to see the underlying contract upon which the obligation lies. When the agency representative asserts that they cannot produce proof of the underlying obligation, we may simply agree with them that no evidence of an underlying obligation exists and that their original process fails to state a claim upon which relief may be granted. We must also, in addition to knowing the law, be well disposed to use it. If we are forced to litigate to correct records created when the representative presumed a claim, we can easily get summary judgment based upon the fact that the agency, through its representative, has asserted that they can produce no evidence of a lawful claim. We agree that there is no lawful claim, there is no controversy, therefore summary judgment is the correct remedy. Once the fact of no obligation is established by summary judgment, then appropriate orders to correct records, replevin seized property, or otherwise correct the wrongs resulting from the representative's erroneous presumption of an obligation. To accomplish this, we need to study and understand the rules of the courts in which we will litigate. The rules are binding upon the court and its officers and provide that if properly administered, most functions of the court are ministerial and not discretionary. If the action is significantly adverse to the status quo, the trial court is likely to make errors. These errors can be addressed on appeal or collateral attack, and if substantive, may provide grounds for holding the officers of the court responsible for the damages based on the breach of their oath or affirmation contract required by Article 6 of the Federal Constitution.
In trying to get a direct internal understanding of the language of the law and of the principles that you've put forward, I want to kind of review some of these points that you've made and just talk about them in a less formal way. It's interesting that you first talked about a kingdom, and I always assumed there was probably no time at which the kingdom was analyzed or explained to you as a legal entity. You just were a subject of the king. Now, what you did was you represented that whole situation of a kingdom as a legal structure, rather than just a fact of nature, as it were, and talked about the king as the officer and the subjects as giving certain taxes for certain guarantees and services. And to me, that's really a rather exciting and revolutionary way of looking at the facts of life in a country, in a nation, which has a kind of a paternal or family structure that's been just taken for granted.
One thing that we can look at to clarify that, in the kingdom, there were both free men and serfs or indentured servants. The barons and the earls and the titles of royalty, titles of nobility, were free men, and the individual people who contracted to work on the various plantations chose allegiance to one of the free men. Those free men were the ones who actually delegated the power to the king. And that's why, when it was time for the Magna Carta, it was the free men who took the king out into the meadow and said, either you're going to be a good king and sign this, or we're going to terminate your contract as king and take just your head back and show what happens when a king breaches the contract.
And prior to that time, there was no written formal structure to this social system. It just was a practice that had evolved out of tribal life itself.
Correct.
So then we begin to see, and I've always heard this, that our Western system of law goes back to the Magna Carta, and that was never really adequately explained when I went to school, so thank you very much. Then the next thing that you talked about was the evolution and restructuring of this kingship situation to fit the possibilities that were presented by this new land and a new society which could be built, as it were, from scratch by the founding fathers. So they were taking this pre-existing system of monarchy from Europe, and they were adapting it, modifying it, extending it, improving it, and building in certain controls to take care of aspects that had not worked satisfactorily or that were missing in the past, and thereby set up the system of checks and balances, a phrase which we've all heard in school, but again, I had not fully understood until you spelled it out.
That's exactly what they were doing. They had the opportunity to create a governmental organization from scratch. And at the time they were doing it, they could see what the problems were with the structure of a kingship. And the discussions they had were, how can we have the benefits of the kingdom without the total loss of control by the people? How do we separate out the various authorities and powers and make sure that the office of king cannot get out of control?
And then you pointed out that the republican form of government as a structure is in itself not sufficient to guarantee liberty. You mentioned that there were other republics, whether the People's Republic of China or the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, which in spite of the name, public, could still be manipulated or rearranged or have rights taken away or surrendered so as to nullify the principles of freedom.
Yes, all a republic means is that there is a written law by which the government operates, and it does not change on the whim of the people or the leaders or anything else. That's the basic foundational law, and it takes a major act of an entire nation to change it. That organic instrument, generally called a constitution, may, like the American Constitution, provide a lot of protections for the people and very limited authority to government. In others, like the socialist republics we used to call Russia or USSR, People's Republic of China, and others, where almost all power, similar to a kingship, is granted to a very small group of men. In China, it's a central committee.